All right. Well, tonight we are going to, at long last, move out of the book of Genesis. We're going to get into our second book, which is called Exodus, and I'll tell you the chapter in just a minute. But first I'd like to review just a little bit. Last week, we covered the life of a man named Abraham. And God chose Abraham to begin the process of communicating his message to the nations of the world. And if you remember, God asked Abraham to move out of his country, and that means that Abraham became an international. He moved to a country that was not his own. It was culturally different than where he came from. And so he probably struggled with some of the things that maybe some of you have struggled with since you came to the United States. Abraham, we estimate, lived about 2400 BC, or about 4,400 years ago. And we also saw that he had a son whose name was Isaac. He was a boy who was really a miracle. His both of his parents were too old to have children, and yet they ended up having a son. His name was Isaac. And from then on, we also saw that Isaac almost was killed, but that, again, he was spared by God. Well, this week, we want to tie in last week's lesson with where we are now, because we're going to travel down our road of history some distance. Isaac had a son whose name was Jacob, and Jacob, which was Abraham's grandson, had 12 sons. And those 12 sons went out, and they all had took to themselves wives, and they began to have families. And these 12 families were then called the 12 tribes of Israel. Jacob had his name changed to Israel, and so these 12 families, or these 12 tribes of Israel, were the beginnings of the nation of what we call Israel. They are now living in the land of Palestine today. Well, anyway, they were living in the land, and if you remember from last week's lesson with Abraham, God said to Abraham that your descendants will inherit this land. And so these 12 tribes of Abraham's descendants were now living in this land. But there was a problem that came up. The problem was that of a famine. Do you know what a famine is? Anybody know what a famine is? It's where they run out of what? Food, exactly. Now, I'm not sure, my memory doesn't serve me correctly. I'm not sure if there was a drought or something like that, but in any event, they ran out of food, and there was food in the land to the south of them, and that was the land of Egypt. And so, after they found out that there was food in Egypt, all of these Jewish people, all the 12 sons and their families and the tribes that came from these 12 sons, they all decided to leave the land that God had told them to go to, and they decided to move down into Egypt because there was food there. Now, Egypt was a different country and a different culture. And so, when all these Jewish people moved into their culture, what did that make all these Jewish people? Right, you guys are waking up. They all became international. They were visitors or guests in another country, in another culture. And so they all began to experience some of the cross-cultural difficulties that some of you may have experienced. Okay. Well, what happened to these Jewish people in Egypt is a very sad story. Because the king in Egypt, who was called Pharaoh, he decided that he didn't like these people. They were guests in their country. They did not have any kind of secret agenda or hidden plan that they were going to take over the country. But the king became afraid of these people, and he turned them all into slaves. And that's a pretty terrible thing. And not only were they slaves, but they were slaves for over 400 years. Generation would grow up into slavery, and their father and their grandfather and great-grandfather, and they were just slaves. They didn't have any choice. They were just had all their things taken from them. They had to work in the fields, work out in the sun. And it was a very terrible way to treat internationals. And I would hope that our country would never treat our internationals as slaves. I mean, what a terrible thing. I mean, it'd be bad for it to happen to anybody, but especially to have it happen to the guests in your country. I mean, that's really bad. And anyway, God was not deaf to the cries of these of his people. They were calling out for God. God, help us, save us, get us out of this terrible situation. And God, after some time, decided that now was the time to act. And so he chose a man who was a Jewish man who happened to have gotten out of Egypt, and he was living in the land of Midian, which is in the northeast corner of Saudi Arabia. Now, here's a Jewish man living in another country, so what does that make him? Right, another international. Now, you might think, oh, this is getting silly, Bill. Well, it's true. This is an international, and his name was Moses. So when God finds or gets Moses, he speaks to him, and he says, Moses, I have a job for you to do. Moses comes back to Egypt, and he is entering or re-entering into the culture that he grew up in. He had left for a while, and now he's back. And he says that God is going to allow these Jewish people in Egypt to leave the country. Well, King Pharaoh doesn't like the idea, and so he puts up a stiff fight. He's not going to let his slaves go. They're his property. They're his people. He wants to keep them there. They do good work for cheap labor, and he's not going to let them go. And so God decides, okay, this guy wants to be stubborn about this. I'm going to show him who's boss. And so he brings a whole bunch of what we call plagues onto the people of Egypt. A plague is like a natural disaster. And there were 10 of them in all. When we come into the story of the book of Exodus, and if you want to open your Bible to Exodus chapter 11, this is where we're going to pick up the story. At the time of Exodus chapter 11, and this happens around 1500 B.C., so this is about 1,000 years later than Abraham, or 1,000 years have transpired between our lesson in Genesis and our lesson tonight in Exodus. Now, the word Exodus means exit or going out. You see an exit sign on the store when you're leaving, that you see the exit. That means Exodus. It's the same thing. It means the way out or going out. And so by the time we hit Exodus chapter 11, 9 of those terrible disasters have already hit Egypt. Some of the disasters were, they had frogs all over the place. You couldn't walk without stepping on a frog. I mean, there were just millions and millions of these frogs. They had gnats, tiny little bugs, you know, that fly around and bite you, you know, and you can't see them. They're so small. But these were so thick, it would actually make the skies turn dark. I mean, just billions of these little things. And they would come and they would bite and nibble on and eat everything. They had flies much the same way. They had animal sickness where most of their animals, cows and sheep and that sort of thing, they all died. They had boils on their body. They had big, huge hailstones like the frozen ice balls that would fall from the sky. And whatever crops that were not destroyed by the other plagues, this wiped the rest of their food supply out. So it was just one national disaster after disaster after disaster. And the poor people of Egypt are saying, why don't you let these people go, Pharaoh? Come on, please, these guys are killing us here. Well, not yet. King Pharaoh was stubborn. He had a hard heart. He didn't want to let these people go. And so now we're going to come on to the last national disaster. God has already predicted that his people, the Jews, are going to be set free from Egypt. Okay? So we're in chapter 11 of Exodus, and this is where we're going to pick up the story. In verse 1, it says, now the Lord had said to Moses, and Moses is the leader, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. After that, he will let you go from here, and when he does, he will drive you out completely. Here again, we see that God is communicating to mankind. He knows the future. He says, this is going to happen, and what's going to happen after that is this will happen. He predicts the future. He knows exactly what's going on. And so let's skip down to verse 4. It says, so Moses said, this is what the Lord says. He's talking to the people now. about midnight, I will go throughout Egypt. He's quoting the Lord. God is going to go throughout Egypt. Every firstborn son in Egypt will die. Now that's boys, men. From the firstborn son of Pharaoh, who sits on the throne, to the firstborn son of the slave girl, who is at her handmill, and all the firstborn of the cattle as well. Now this would be the cattle that are still alive. Verse 6, there will be a loud wailing throughout Egypt. Wailing is like severe crying. Worse than there has ever been or ever will be again. But among the Israelites, not a dog will bark at any man or animal. Now what he means by that is that the Jews are going to be spared of this disaster. In all of the other 9 disasters, the Jews were not touched at all. They were not bothered by the frogs or the gnats or the boils or the sickness, the animal sickness. None of that affected the Jews. The Jews were living in a place called Goshen. And if you know where the Nile River goes up and it meets the Mediterranean Sea, they were on the northeast corner of where that Nile River hits the Mediterranean Sea. And that was the only place in all of Egypt where all of these plagues did not bother the people or the residents or the cattle or the crops there. They were spared. And so God is saying here that while all of Egypt is going to be wailing and crying and sobbing at this terrible thing that's going to happen, it says where the Jewish people are going to be, there will not even be a dog barking. There will be peace. There will be quiet because they will not be affected. Then it says, you will know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. In other words, Pharaoh says, I will not let these people go. God says, oh, yes, you will. And there is a big difference between the way human beings think and there's a big difference between the way God thinks. And God, what God is saying is that God's ways will work out. They will prevail. And there's a big difference between the way we as human beings think and the way that God thinks. So, let's go down to chapter 12 now, because this is where we're going to get into this national disaster. Remember, God has predicted that the firstborn or the oldest son in every family is going to die. And that's a terrible thing. And even the firstborn male cattle is going to die too. But he says the Jews are going to be spared of this. And in chapter 12, we're going to find out how they will be spared or saved from this disaster. So in chapter 12, verse 1, it says, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, now Aaron was his brother, and they are in Egypt now. And in verse 2 it says, this month is to be for you the first month of your year. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb. Everybody knows what a little lamb is. For his family, one for each household. Verse 4, if any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share one with their nearest neighbor, having taken into account the number of people there are. You are to determine the amount of each lamb needed in accordance with what each person will eat. So what he's saying is, you need to find a lamb that is proportionate or equal to the needs of your family. Or if you're going to share a lamb, make sure you have a lamb that's the appropriate size for 2 families that would share. So in verse 5 it says, the animals you choose must be 1 year old males. And notice this, they are to be without defect. You know what that means? Without defect? They were to be spotless. They were to be clean. They were to be healthy. And they were to be whole. In other words, you could not pick a deformed or a mutilated or a sick or something like that animal. You had to choose one that by all apparent observations was a perfect animal. Clean, whole, and all of that. So they were to be animals without defect, and you may take them from the sheep or of the goats. Okay? Do you remember last week in Abraham's lesson? When he found that ram, it was caught by the horns. And do you remember we said that if he had been caught in the thorn bush by his body or by a leg, he would have gotten all scratched up. And that ram last week's lesson would not have been suitable for God. Because God is perfect, and when he requests something, he wants the absolute best. And that's what he's saying here. This lamb must be a reflection of what God expects. God expects perfection. He expects cleanness. He expects purity. See? And so the animal that they are going to select must represent a similarity to God's character. And so in verse 6, then he gives another command. He says, take care of them until the 14th day of the month, when all of the people of the community of Israel must slaughter them or kill them at twilight. Twilight is when the sun goes down. Now notice, they were supposed to choose the animal on the 10th day, and they were to kill him on the 14th day. Now there was a reason for this. They held the animal for 4 days. Does anybody know why they would hold the animal for 4 days? Anybody think of a good reason why they would do that? Okay, yeah, that was the reason why. You could have an animal that looks good, but inside he may have just contracted some disease or something, and it might show up a day or two later. So they would keep this animal in a pen, they would watch it closely, separate it from all the other animals, and these 4 days was a time of proving or testing. And so they gave it 4 days to come up to see if it was sick or ill or something like that. So the 4 days ensured that the lamb that appeared to be clean and pure was indeed clean and pure. So it was a time of separation to really make sure to check this lamb out to make sure that it was perfect the way God wanted it to. And so then at the end of this proving time, this lamb was killed when the sun went down. So in verse 7 it says, then they are to take some of the blood, this is the lamb's blood, and put it on the sides and the tops of the door frames of the houses where they eat the lamb. Now they are going to cook this lamb for dinner, but they did a very unusual thing. If you can see the door jamb over there, we call it a jamb in America. You see the sides of the doorway where the wood is there. Well, they were to take some of this animal blood, this lamb's blood, and they had a little bush. We're going to skip over some of the verses tonight, but you can go back if you want to and read the whole chapter, and you will find out that there was a plant that was called hyssop. And it was a little brush-like plant that grew low to the ground. And they would pick up some of this plant, and they would drain some of the blood into a little bowl. And then they took this little brush-like plant, and they would dip it in the blood, and they would put blood on the sides of the door opening, and then across the top. And they did this on the outside of the house. Okay? Now that sounds really strange. And I'm going to explain to you why God did that, or why he told them to do that. But that's what they're telling them to do. Take some of the blood, and obviously that would leave a red stain over the door, or around the door, that would be visible from the outside. And so this is what he asked them to do, was to take some of the blood, verse 7, and put it on the sides and the top of the door frames of the houses where they are to eat the lamb. Verse 8, that same night they are to eat the meat roasted over the fire. So they had to cook the meat, along with bitter herbs and bread made without yeast. Now, the bitter herbs was a symbol here. They were to make some herbs that had a real sour and a bitter taste. And this was to remind them of something. What this was to remind them of was the 400 years of bitter and sour experience of being slaves in Egypt. Because this is the night. Remember, God says they will let you go. As a matter of fact, they're going to drive you out after this night. So this is to be a remembrance of all of the bad years that they had as slaves in Egypt. That's what the bitter herbs represented. And then it says that they were to eat bread without, or bread made without yeast. How many of you know what yeast does to bread? When you put yeast into the bread, what does it do? How does it affect the bread? Right? What is it, Kate? Okay, it makes it expand or rise, okay? Some people don't, when they don't put yeast in their bread, the bread is very thick and heavy. But when you put the yeast in, it makes the bread rise. It's almost like putting air in a balloon. Well, the balloon is small, but when you blow the air in, it gets very light and it expands and it grows in size. Well, that's what yeast does to bread. And so they were supposed to make this bread without yeast. And we'll explain that in just, well, I can explain it now. What that really means is when you make bread, you have to mix the flour and the water, and then you let it sit for a while. And then after it has sit for a while, after you stick it over there for a while, then you put the yeast in later. And bread is a kind of a time-consuming process. But you don't put the yeast in right away. You put it in after a while. And what he says here is you are going to be leaving Egypt so fast that you will not have time to put the yeast into the bread. And you won't have time for the bread to rise either. So he's saying this is a little indication how fast they're going to be driven out of Egypt. Don't put bread or yeast in the bread because you won't have time to eat it because you're going to be out of here in no time. You'll be out very, very soon. Okay, let's drop down to verse 12. And now we're going to get into more of God's explanation of what's going to happen this night. In verse 12 it says, on that same night, the night that they kill the lamb, the night that they eat the meat, the night that they put the blood on the doorpost, on that same night I will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn, both men and animals. And I will bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. See, what he's going to show them is that there is only one true and real God, and that is the God of the Bible. And he's going to show them by the fact that he is the one who gives life, he is the one who has the authority to take life. And so verse 13, the blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are. See, when God tells them to brush the door posts of the house with the blood, he says later on, down in verse 22, it says, when you do that and you close the door, you stay in the house all night. Don't go outside. You'll risk your life. So when you brush that blood after the animal is dead and you start cooking and you start eating, don't go out of the house for any reason. So what he's saying, he says, this will be a sign for you in verse 13 on the houses where you are, where you're staying that night, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And this is where we get the name of this dinner. It's called the Passover dinner. Because when God comes down and he moves through Egypt, when he sees the blood on the doorpost, he says, I will omit you, or I will allow you to be spared of this terrible judgment, this terrible plague. In other words, the firstborn people in your house are going to be protected or saved from death, from spared from judgment. That's what he says. And how will they be spared? Because the lamb's blood will protect them. That's the sign. That's the sign that they have done what God has said. He says, no destructive plague will touch you when I strike Egypt. Okay? So it's the blood of the Lamb that is the protection from God's judgment. And this is very, very important. Now, keep in mind that these Jewish people have been living in Egypt, and these nine other plagues have already happened. They have seen the flies all around them, but they didn't come into their area. They saw the gnats, they saw the frogs, they saw the hail. They have seen all of this stuff happening all around them. It's like all this disaster is happening all around them, but where they are, they're safe. Now, if you had seen all of these national disasters touch all of these Egyptians, but they didn't touch you, and then God says, now I'm going to come down, and this is what you have to do to protect your firstborn, would you do what God said if you had seen all these things happen? Well, I would. I mean, if I saw all these terrible things happening and all these Egyptian people running around saying, oh, will you people get out of here? You guys are killing us. And then Moses comes to God, and God tells Moses, and Moses tells you, you have to kill a lamb. Well, they did. They saw all these things happening, and they were not going to take any chances. And as far as we know, every single Jewish family did exactly as God told them. They took a lamb on the 10th day. They watched it for 4 days. They killed it on the 14th day. They cooked the meat. They put the blood on the door. And then, that night, God was going to come. In verse 14, it says, this is a day you are to commemorate, to make it special. For the generations to come, you shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord, a lasting ordinance. So this dinner was going to be a special meal, a special kind of celebration, because this is going to be really their independence. They are going to get free from Egypt this night. Now, let's go over to verse 29 of the same chapter. Verse 29 says, at midnight, now here we go, this is what's going to happen, all the talking is done, all the lambs have been killed and eaten, all the blood is on the doors of all the Jewish homes. So in verse 29, at midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in Egypt. From the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on the throne, he had a young son, to the firstborn of the prisoner, who was in the dungeon, and the firstborn of all of the livestock as well. Here we see God doing exactly as he said. What God says he does. There is no discrepancy, there's no difference. God is faithful to his word. And when he warns of something that's going to happen, you can be assured that it will happen exactly the way God says. And so here he does what he says he's going to do. These people are so stubborn, and Pharaoh is so stubborn, that Pharaoh, as a leader, refuses to listen to any of his counselors, any of his aides that may have said, you've got to let these people go. Their God is too much. We can't handle this kind of God. And he said, no, no, no. And now even Pharaoh himself has lost his firstborn, his oldest son. And so in verse 30, Pharaoh and all his officials and all the Egyptians got up during the night. And there was loud wailing, crying, bitter sobbing in Egypt. For there was not a house without someone dead. Sad situation. Every single family in Egypt lost a son. And all of those who had cattle lost the oldest male cattle. And so God is only doing what he warned these people to do. And, you know, interestingly enough, if the Egyptians had heard about this warning with the lamb, they could have done the same thing and put the blood on their doors as well. They could have. There's nothing here that says that they could not have done that. They were free to do that, but I don't know why they didn't. I don't know if they didn't hear the message or what. But this is what the Jewish people did, and every single one of the Jewish families was spared or saved, and the Egyptian people were not. So in verse 31, during that night, Pharaoh summoned or called Moses and Aaron, Aaron is his brother, and said, "Up! Leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said, and go and bless me." Can you feel the intensity of his voice? I mean, here he's just lost his son. His whole country is in an uproar now. People in every house are crying and sobbing. They've got to go out and bury these sons in the morning. And it's just a terrible thing. I mean, all this death all over the whole country. I mean, and this is the culmination of all of these other disasters. They're out of food. They're out of cattle. Now they're out of their own sons. They've got to bury these sons, all because of Pharaoh and his people were so stubborn that they would not heed God. So Pharaoh is greatly upset by this now. The king of Egypt is broken. He doesn't have any more fight left in him. He doesn't want to rebel against this God anymore. And you can see in verse 31, he's really intense. "Up, leave my people. Get out of here. I'm sick and tired of you guys being here. I don't want you here anymore. Take your stuff and go." So in verse 33, "And the Egyptians," now these are the people, "urged the people to hurry and leave the country. For otherwise," they said, "we will all die." They were so bewildered. They were heartbroken. Their firstborn sons are dead now. And they think, whatever killed them is going to kill me too. And so they don't want these people around a minute longer. And so they say, "Will you just pack your bags and get out of here? Please, this is terrible. No more death, no more destruction. We've had it up to here. We can't take any more. Just get out of here and go." And it happened exactly the way God said it was going to happen. God said, "They will drive you out. You will have to take your bread with you. You can't put yeast in it even." And so in verse 34, "So the people," that's the Jewish people, "took their dough before the yeast was added and carried it on their shoulders in kneading troughs wrapped in clothing." In verse 35, watch this. "The Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and for clothing." In other words, he says, hey, you might as well get in while the getting in is good. And so watch what happened in verse 36. "The Lord had made the Egyptians favorably disposed toward the people." That's the Jewish people. "And they," the Egyptians, "gave them what they asked for, so they plundered the Egyptians." In other words, they ripped them off, as we say in America. In other words, when the Jewish people were packing their things, not just their things, not just their clothes and their animals and all of their belongings, but they went to the Egyptian people that were their neighbors, and they said, "Hey, can I have that jewelry?" And they said, "Yes, yes, just take it quick. Please, get out of here. Well, can I have your nice robe and your nice clothes? Oh, yes, please, please." And they just literally gave them anything and everything they asked for. To the point, I would imagine, that they probably had so many nice things that they may have left some of their old stuff at home. Because remember, they were slaves. And so they didn't have many things, if any, of real value and of real worth. And so as they were packing up and as they were leaving and they would see Egyptians along the way, they would say, "Hey, do you mind if I have your golden ring?" "No, no," and he'd pull it off his finger. "Here, just take it quick and go, get out of here. And can I have your nice pair of Reeboks," or whatever they had, you know, their nice sandals, their nice robes, and a nice hat, and a nice chariot. "Oh, yes, please, here, just take it. Can I have the keys to your car?" "Oh, yes, here, drive it away." See, whatever they had, they were allowed to just, they just gave it to them. Because they were so afraid and so scared that these people were going to hang around too much longer, that if they thought giving their rings or their clothes or their valuable things would get them out of here sooner, they would let them have it. And so by the end of the Jewish people staying in Egypt, Egypt was really reduced to like rubble, little bits of pieces of rock. Their crops were destroyed. Their animals were destroyed. Their heart was destroyed. Their oldest male children were killed. And now the Jewish people are literally just taking them for whatever they want. And so they took some of their nice clothes and their rings and their hats and their chariots and anything of value that the Jews thought that they wanted, they just asked them for it. They didn't steal it. They just said, "You mind if I have this?" And they said, "No, here, take it. Please, quick, just get out of here, go." And so obviously they went in as international guests. Egypt made them slaves, made them stay as slaves for 400 years, which is a terrible thing. It's a, like I said at the beginning, it's a bad way to treat anybody, to turn them into a slave. But when you have international guests in your country and you turn around and make them slaves, well, that's really a terrible crime. And so what God was doing was he was, in a sense, just saying, you have defrauded, you have been very cruel to my people, and now you're going to pay it back. You're going to have to reimburse these people for the hard times that you gave them while they were in your country. And so by the time the Jewish people leave the land of Egypt, they are making out like kings. They're setting out with all this stuff, and God has taught the people in Egypt a lesson, that you should not disobey God. You should not go against his ways. God shows, as he said earlier, that there is a difference between the gods of Egypt and the gods of the Bible, the God that the Jewish people are representing. And so now the Jewish people are on their way back to the land that God had given to them through the man Abraham that we covered last week. And on their way back, next week, when we come back, next week we're going to find out that God gave them a list of things that they were to do once they got back into their land. And it's a very, very famous and important list. And we're going to find out how they did and what their attitudes about this list of things to do was. Not like a shopping list, but it was something, a list of things that said, if you do this, then great. And next week we'll find out about that list that God asked them to do. So at this point we'll take questions. Does anybody have any questions?